put up with lower quality if I can manage to talk to my friend, relative, whatever. So if you look at the countries that have high prices, like Israel, Brazil, etc., these are some of the first places that very aggressively moved to using voice over IP from PC to PC. The next thing that happened was people said, but I want to call this person who doesn't have a PC. What can I do? Well, Jeff Pulver and others started up a system where they would say, well, I know somebody who lives near them who has a PC, and what we'll do is we'll send data traffic to that PC, and we'll simply make a local telephone call, and we'll deliver the call now to this person who only has a telephone. And so we started to have PC to telephone. Then the next thing that happened is people said, oh, but the person wants to call me back. So what do? Instead of calling me directly, they call this computer that's near them, get onto the data network, deliver the call now to a PC. But if I can do PC to telephone and telephone to PC, then clearly I can do telephone to telephone. I simply gateway it into the network, bring it through the network, and come out and deliver it by the local telephony network. Premises to premises, so we can connect one PBX to another PBX. Premises to the network, so for example, one of the very interesting things in this building was when the Stockholm's University and KTH got space in this building, one of the interesting things was that Telia was very, 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 very eager that they use voice over IP. Why? Because they love voice over IP? No. The problem was because the building would have to be rewired with new telephones, the cost of running the wires for all of those telephones, if they did a traditional installation, would be too expensive. Right? And a university building is particularly bad because you have lots of rooms, but you have very few people in them with telephones, with fixed line telephones. But yet you have to put jacks in there should someone ever want to use a telephone from that room. So the result was Telia said, please, we want you to use voice over IP. Right? And the advantage is you're already putting up the local area network wiring and you're paying for that and doing it yourself. Yes, very interesting. In addition, a huge saving because they didn't have to run all of these twisted pair wires from this building to the local exchange. So in fact, what many operators are doing is they want to have a premises-based voice over IP system and trunk everything back to the exchange using a high-speed data connection. Why? Because telephony connections in E1s, that's multiples of 2 megabits apiece, are expensive to put in. Right? But we can get 10 megabits per second over a single ADSL line or an SDSL line, and it's much cheaper. So it's cheaper for the operator. So therefore, premises to network. And interestingly, network to network, amazingly popular for operators. So for instance, if you call from Sweden to, let's say, New York City, there's a very, very, very high probability, even if you're calling from, for instance, Telia Sonera's fixed network, that your call is actually a voice over IP call. Not that you can see it, but in fact, they turned it into voice over IP traffic to send it across a high-speed link across the Atlantic to turn it back into a telephone call on the other side for several reasons. All right. The first reason is they get a factor of 2 difference in cost of the bandwidth that they need. Why is that? Okay. Think of traditional telephony as a circuit switch system versus a packet switch system. Why do we get roughly a factor of 2 increase in efficiency by moving to a packet switch system for voice. Anyone know? So, how can we get a factor of two? Anyone want to help her out? Yes? But why? So, can you help him out? Yes. Because in the circuit switch case, we set up two 64 kilobits per second circuits running in both directions, of which most of the time, only one of them is being used. Right? Because in most of the time, we don't have both people speaking at the same time. Although one of my very favorite authors or books on this subject is an excellent book by a woman who's a professor at Georgetown University who wrote a book called Men and Women in Conversation. And she's an anthropologist, and she looks at the pattern of what happens when men speak to men, when men speak to women, or women speak to men, and women speak to women. And there's a difference in the timing of when one person stops and the other person starts speaking in these, and there's a difference in cultures. And of course, there are certain places like New York City where there is no gap between when one person finishes speaking and the other person starts speaking, they'll be speaking at the same time. Why is this so important? This is where we get nearly a factor of two, or perhaps more. That's real money, right? Otherwise, you'd have to have more capacity. So they gain there. Where else do they gain? Well, that's right. So by doing statistical multiplexing, now you can basically not send any data when there's no speech to carry. And this is called silent suppression. And you can gain a tremendous amount from that. And we'll see more about that shortly. So network to network is incredibly good use of voice over IP, even by traditional telecom operators. So what does this mean? Well, it means, for instance, that if you have someone at home or in a small office, home office, so-called SOHO setting, they might have a telephone, a workstation, and one telephone line connected to the exchange. And a number of years ago, there was a joint company between Telly and Ericsson called Elintel. And Theo Kanter, who is one of my former doctoral students, and some others developed a system so that users who would be working from such a place would be able to be reached by phone even though they had this connection to the local exchange in use for data communications, typically by a dial-up modem at that time. Now, why was this such a big issue? Right? So you had a user who dialed in, they were using some ISP attached over here. What happened if someone called them from the public network? The phone was busy, right? The line was in use because they had the connection established to their ISP. And they might have that connection established for hours, days, weeks, months, right? So the result is anyone trying to call them on that phone line couldn't reach them. And so how much money did the telecom operator make for those calls? Nothing. Right? So this group at Elintel introduced a new product called Phone Doubler. And the idea now was if you were logged in here with your computer, you ran a little application. And now if a telephone call came for you at the exchange, it would send a message over your data connection to the application running here saying you've got a telephone call. And if you want to take it, push this button, and now using a voice over IP application, you could send voice over this link at the same time that your data applications were running, hence the name phone doublet. Yes, now the operator makes money, right, because the phone calls get delivered. The other interesting feature that this means is that suddenly now, let's say a second person started to work in this office. If it was a normal telephone installation, what would happen? Well, you would run a second telephone line, right? That costs you more money to go and install the second telephone line. What happens if you have a voice over IP service? You just plug in another voice over IP telephone, right? Because there was enough bandwidth over this connection to support multiple telephone calls as the speed of the modem on these wires got faster. And suddenly you could multiplex several telephones into this, and it was very cheap. Yes. Very serious financial savings. You could do the same thing in offices where you could now have a voice gateway running here and now attach your phones via wireless LANs or other in-building communication systems from your access points to handsets through routers off to wherever you wanted. And suddenly things became very, very interesting. And all because of things like these voice gateways. So what's inside one of these things? Well, if we look at the simplest one, it's not that different from an ISDN modem. We've got, in this case, some interface to the physical wire running to the exchange. And then generally there was a D to A converter and an A to D converter and a little modem chip. And there was a data path and a digitized voice or data path, a LAN interface, and local area network. So one of the neat things is it turns out that most of these modems were made by Rockwell, and you could change one bit in them, and suddenly you could turn this into a voice gateway. Right? Because now we could take speech through the A to D converter and send it out as packets on the LAN. So suddenly you had these devices appearing, often called ATAs, analog telephony adapters, and they had two jacks on the outside, and you simply took a regular telephone, unplugged it from the normal telephone jack, plugged it into this box, and this box was in turn plugged into your LAN, which was in turn attached to something that went over your broadband network. And voila, you had just now switched from analog telephony to voice over IP. Yes, incredibly powerful. For the cost of one of these little boxes, you could easily switch. So there are companies like Hotfit, not surprisingly, started by one of the other people involved in phone doubler, that became telephone companies. And you could go there and you could sign up and you could get a telephone number. And why was that so important? Well, it turns out the only people who are allowed to assign telephone numbers in Sweden, and in fact basically worldwide, are telecom operators. So to be able to have a telephone number, you had to have someone assign you a telephone number. Right? So if you wanted to be able to hand out your telephone number to people and be connected by voice over IP, you had to go to somebody who was a telecom operator. And we'll see more of that later. But anyhow, these voice gateways let you do all kinds of neat things. Not only support telephony, but you can take your fax machine and instead of plugging it into the telephone jack, plug it into one of these gateways. Voila, your fax is now able to send its fax traffic across IP. Now, why is this an enormous change? Well, you have some businesses that, for instance, every day send out price sheets of here are our prices for the today, and they're sent out by fax to hundreds or thousands of their customers. If you do that with the telephony system, what do you have to do? you have to have a machine that dials up each of those fax machines and sends it its own copy of the fax. What happens if I have the digitized content that I want to send on a computer? Yes, I can have the computer simply send packets out, and if the network supports multicast, I can even multicast those packets out to all of those machines at the same time. So all my customers know about the prices at the same time. However, it turns out fax, and we should come back to this point earlier, it sounds like an incredibly simple thing, right? The fax machine used to plug into that telephone jack. If this little box supports telephones, why can't I put my fax machine into this little box and have everything work? So where's the problem? Okay, everyone knows what a fax machine is, right? A facsimile machine. You feed it pieces of paper with printing on them. It scans them, turns those into bits, modulates those with a modem signal, sends them across the telephone network. At the other end, it takes those squeaks, turns them back into bits, and prints them out on the page. Okay. He's told us it's simple. Right, so where's the problem? The fax machine has been turned into the bits on the page into analog tones. So where's the problem? Okay, the problem is, in human speech, we're very adaptable. Fax machines aren't. Fax machines expect that when they are sending the stream is being sent synchronously to the other machine, because the timing of knowing whether their bits should be on or off, which is then decoded into whether the pixel should be black or white on the piece of paper, is synchronized. And the little stepper motor that's moving the paper through is expected to produce a constant rate of data. The problem is we're sending it across an IP network. Does it get delivered at the other end necessarily at exactly this nice smooth rate that we were expecting across the telephony network? No. And are fax machines adaptable? No. So I once went to a conference where there was an entire session just on how to be able to attach fax machines to data networks, and all the problems that they had to solve to be able to do that. Now, of course, if you think about it, why am I attaching this fax machine to this network? Right? After all, it's just the scanner. Right? I could just scan it, turn it into a file, send the file across, and now I could say, print out this file, no problem. Right? All, we removed all the problems about synchronization. Right? But the problem is, it's not a fax machine. Now, why is it important it's a fax machine? Anyone ever worked for a business here? Yes. Well, the key word you're missing is the fact that it's considered a legal transmission of the document, because the fax machine prints across the top of it this little strip of information with the date and time and so forth of the originator.
You need to remember that
this time. That's right. And that turns out, under the law in almost all countries, to make it a legally binding document, because you have the proof when it was sent, who sent it, etc. That's not true if I send a file and I say, hey, here's the contract. It's in this file, print it out. That's not considered a legally binding transmittal in many countries. But a fax is, because it is a special consideration in the law. So that's still why people wanted to be able to have faxes work. Okay. However, there are a whole bunch of other services that can now be done, things like call centers. right? Countries like India have made enormous amounts of money because companies could outsource the call center handling to somewhere else where labor was cheaper. Or sometimes they could do it because people were awake. So a tremendous number of companies have made amazing amounts of money by offering 24-hour-a-day service with there being no premium for calling at night. You can call any day of the year, any hour of the day, and you'll be able to get service. Now, those companies did very successfully, and one of them is a Swedish woman from Minnesota who has a Carlson travel agency, and she got a contract with the U.S. government for providing travel services, and one of the key features was the fact that there was 24-hour-a-day telephone support. You could call anytime you wanted, and there would be an operator to answer your call. Whereas the other competing company said, well, if you call between 9 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock in the evening, Eastern Standard Time, we'll answer your call. Hey, there's a big difference here, right? Or some companies who would say, yes, you could call outside of those hours, but you have to pay extra if you want service. So suddenly these companies saying 24 hours a day you call, no problem. Now, do they have a big room somewhere with all of these people sitting? Not necessarily. So Clarkson and several other companies were very successful saying, no, we can scatter the people who are going to be our phone operators anywhere they have internet connectivity. And we simply direct the call to the next one who's available, and they have access to the voice call and all the data via the database for that particular customer. And it doesn't matter where they are. All that matters is they're working. So some of these companies basically have a little switch beside a PC microphone. And if you work for them, what you do to go to work in the morning means you go and turn the switch into the on position saying you're ready to take calls. And now you say, oh, time for lunch, flip the switch to the off mode, I'm not available. And for several of these companies, that means I'm not getting paid anymore. But as soon as I come back, I flip the switch on, I'm getting paid again, and I'm on the clock. Incredibly powerful. So this radically changed the way that you could build such call centers. You didn't build a physical place anymore as a call center with huge, just acres of or hectares of cubicles with people with little headsets on them. So if you're in Stockholm and you call the number 150000, do you know where the person is who answers that call? Anyone know where that call center is? Where? Where's the call center? Okay, well, first of all, that's the telephone number for Taxi Stockholm. Okay, it turns out Taxi Stockholm's call center is not a physical place. It's people working all over the archipelago that are working in this mode by having a telephone and a computer, and they are a virtual call center. And they don't have to commute from their little island to somewhere else to work. They just go in and say, okay, now I'm working. All right. We can do things like integrated messaging. So now I can not only have access to voice, but I can have text messages, access to databases, etc. Least cost routing, I can figure out which way I should send this call and control that. So basically the gateways have to provide three functions. We need to interface to the public switch telephony network from the internet. So that means we have to take this synchronous voice call, digitize it, turn it into packets and send it, and the reverse. We need to be able to have directory mapping because we need to be able to go from telephone numbers to IP addresses. And we need to do authentication and billing. So we only want to provide the service to people who pay, and we want to be able to produce the appropriate billing record. So this raises the next issue, which is to do this conversion, we need to have some way of representing that data in packets. And of course, one of the most common means of doing this is that we use a codec, a coder decoder, and one of the very popular ones is called G723.1, and or 729, or 711, et cetera, et cetera. There are bunches of them. We need to do signaling. So we need to say, there's a call now, and it should be to this party, and they want to use this codec. And a huge change is the fact that normally in telephony, the only time you can do signaling is at the beginning and end of a call. What the Ocantor dissertation actually was about the fact that we can now use SIP to do signaling of other events, even during the middle of the call. As we mentioned, fax support, in particular things like store and forward, we need management functions. And next comes the very difficult issue of compatibility. So we have so-called de jure standards, standardized by various organizations like the ITU and others, and then you have de facto standards. So for instance, Netscape did something called CoolTalk, Microsoft did something called NetMeeting, which used to use a standard called H.323, which came out of this standardization effort. Nowadays it uses SIP, and the major one of the signaling protocols we'll talk about is the session initiation protocol. As an example of such a device, Cisco's 3600 series routers were their first product that introduced voice over IP handling, and they advertised as being for toll bypass, i.e. avoiding long distance calls, remote PBXs, unified voice and data, and a gateway between the plain old telephony system and internet telephony. They used RTP for carrying the digitized audio and video traffic. They supported loads of different codecs at different data rates. So it could go all the way down to 8 kilobits per second. It used voice activity detection. And in the second thesis I mentioned this morning by Thomas Matheson, one of the biggest difficulties he ran into is if a packet is lost and it's time to play that packet, what do you do? Well, since you didn't receive anything, you've got a choice, right? You can make up something and play that. You can take the last packet you had and play it again, right? But the hard problem is you can't just not play anything. Because it turns out that people's ears are very, very used to hearing something, and as soon as they hear absolute silence, they think that the circuit has been broken. Because in telephony systems, normally, when there's only complete silence, it's not working. Right? So if you use voice activity detection, say, I only send packets when there's something to be sent, the person on the other end is going to think that except when the user is speaking, there's something wrong. So it turns out what you have to do is do something called comfort noise. So you actually purposely generate noise, and you do that locally. Because since no new packet has arrived, you don't have any new data to play. So what do? Well, you just make something up, and you make noise that sounds about like the noise in between when the person was speaking. And if you do that right, the person on the receiving end will not be able to detect that voice activity detection is taking place. It's very, very, very cute. And it turns out if you do this really very well, you get to do the statistical multiplexing, so you save money, the customer's happy, which means, of course, the vendor's happy because they buy your box. Now, and of course, support for fax. Well, not surprisingly, in the fixed setting, this did very well. But there were people who said, well, in this case, Symbol Technologies had a pharmaceutical customer who had a big warehouse, and they had people out in the warehouse filling orders, and occasionally they would need to talk to somebody somewhere else in the warehouse. Now, of course, they could pull out their cell phone, they could have their cordless phone or whatever, but they were already carrying a data terminal with a wireless LAN connection. And they said, why don't we just digitize the voice and send that over the same infrastructure? So we only have to set up one network in our warehouse, we'll set up one wireless LAN. The result is they built such a system, used a voice gateway, and they could handle 25 simultaneous full duplex phone calls using a single cell in a wireless LAN. Yes, very big cost savings. And most importantly, because the people filling these orders were able to deal with problems, they could correctly deliver their orders, and it made the quality of the company's performance much higher, which meant the company did very, very well. So what does this sort of suggest? Well, January 25th in 1999, there was this news released by Telia's news service saying they had just acquired this company, Globalcast Internetworking, and the company's business was basically to put up wireless LAN access points with the idea that you would put into business premises wireless LAN communication, and as you went from one branch office to another branch office, by just adding a few more wireless LAN access points around the city, you could continue to talk by your wireless LAN equipped computer, handset, whatever. Interestingly, they quickly removed this and later pretended it never happened, because in fact this revealed too much of their strategy, because it turned out it wasn't until much later that they introduced their service Home Runs to basically be public wireless LAN access, except of course you have to pay them. But one of the things today is that if they have a wireless LAN access point and you're one of their broadband subscribers, you can use it anywhere you are. And of course, if you're one of their broadband subscribers, why not run VoIP over it? We get to keep you as a customer. Otherwise, you're likely to, use your cell phone and use Tele2 or somebody else. Right? Better we make the revenues and keep you as a customer. Another part is that, okay, you're a cellular company and you put up these cellular base stations, but there's a problem. You need to connect those base stations back to your switching infrastructure and to your backbone network. But unless you're the incumbent telephone operator, how do you manage to connect your base stations back to your backbone network? Anyone know? Well, you either had to rent wires from your competitor, which is not a nice thing to have to do in business, because what order? You ordered a wire from this point to that point? Oh, we never got that order. Or you did what Pacific Bell did, which is they had one person who took and processed all such orders in the state. And they had to be sent in paper. And this one person would type them all into the order entry system. And that way they said, yes, we processed all the orders from our competitors for putting in these wires. We just do it very slowly. Okay, so that's difficult. The other is you could use wireless backhaul, but now you have to get another frequency. Now you have to align your antennas and et cetera, et cetera. So Ericsson introduced the system saying, well, why don't you just attach your base stations to the LAN infrastructure? And now you can simply trunk all of that voice traffic and all the signaling traffic back over an IP network. So now effectively you're using VoIP to connect cellular base stations. And they call that GSM on the net. By the way, of course, it was never really sold in Sweden because they didn't like that option here. They would sooner that you would use a different solution. But it was very popular in places where they didn't have a lot of customers already. Because, in fact, they could sell this easily into, for instance, a company that had a number of plants distributed in the given area and was simply putting this up as cellular-based cordless telephony. So now you could go from one side of the company to another side of the company and use your same handset. And it all worked, sort of like a big PBX. So, as of 2003, about 14% of all the international traffic to and from the U.S. was already being carried by VoIP. So 24 billions of minutes versus 107.7 billion minutes. Yes. Yes. They're connected by E1 backhauls, by traditional telecom links, right? And those are expensive, we said earlier this morning. So you've got to decrease your costs if you go in this direction. That wasn't done here. But in other places outside of Sweden, this was something that was very attractive, particularly in the U.S. Okay. So here, if you were an operator and you looked at this and you said, gee, 14% has already moved to using VoIP, what just happened to my revenues? Right? Because these people are getting cheap calls. They're not paying my high prices for international calls. As of March of 2007, VoIP calling plans for unlimited North American traffic costs $24.99 a month. Flat rate. Anywhere in the country, as much as you wanted to talk, for $25 a month, like 250 kroner at the time. Incredibly cheap. There's an excellent article by Niels Herbert and Jelka Andersen called Tele-Efterfrågan på AXE med IP Telefoni in Electronic Evening in March of 2005, where they told about Telia's plans to replace all of their main switches with voice over IP in 5 years. Yes, just 2 years left. And why was this such a sea change? Well, think if you were a company like Ericsson at the beginning of the 90s, Tele had roughly 1,500 basic switches, rather, as these AXEs are for fixed telephony, scattered around Sweden. So each year, maybe you sold, let's say, 75 of them. Okay, and you did that year after year after year. And suddenly now you have one of your customers saying, oh no, we're not going to buy anymore. In fact, not only are we not going to buy anymore, we're going to get rid of all the ones we have in 5 years. Now, why is that a big shock? Well, in the traditional telephony world, these kind of switches were used for 30 years. Right? And it's only after 30 years that you replace them. So to have the customer who's saying, in 5 years, we're getting rid of all of them. There went a major part of your business, because you know you're not going to sell them anymore. And not only aren't you going to sell them any new switches, you're not going to sell them any repair parts or software upgrades or anything for the switches, because they're gone. So they went from 1,500 telephone exchanges in Sweden, now we're just talking about Telia, to today, less than 200. Now, in addition to not buying more traditional telephone switches, what did this mean? Anyone know? What? That's right. So there's new business opportunity for someone else to sell them this new infrastructure. But what else? Okay. Any of you ever go and tour a telephone exchange? All right. There used to be this building filled with all these switches and racks of stuff in it. Well, they don't have those buildings anymore. There's no need for whole buildings to do that. You can fit this switch for a modest-sized community in a thing smaller than this and stick it in a hole in the ground. So one of Telia's biggest things in the last decade has been just selling all those buildings that they used to have switches in. So there are 1,000 buildings that were sold. A major change. All right? So, this is a very interesting move. It shows how things can move relatively quickly. Again, about economics. The next question is, okay, so all these people are moving to voice over IP because they want the cheap prices. What can carriers do? Well, of course, there's a nice article about this. And they said, what is the reality in the battle over packet versus circuit switch telephony? What is hype? Well, if we look at the cost savings, the result is this is a great thing for carriers too. So rather than fight it, say, hey, yes, yes, want to buy VoIP? We'll sell you VoIP, or we'll, you know, lease it to you. Hey, VoIP, you know, right? And sort of like drug dealers, you know, the first call is free or whatever. I mean, the net result is suddenly carriers became VoIP enthusiasts instead of trying to fight it. Now, that doesn't mean all of them did. So if you're in countries like Nicaragua, the result is the government passed a law making VoIP illegal. Why? Because Nicaragua had a state-owned telephone company, and they saw that VoIP meant they were going to lose revenues. So what's the easiest thing? Pass a law against it. Well, unfortunately, that didn't work out very well. So they've since changed. And now they have a competitive market. So now you have basically enhanced service providers. Exception meant that ISPs didn't have to pay access charges to the local telephone company since the ISP just receives calls from users. And this is about the flows of money between these different parties. So the result is if a carrier didn't provide you with voice over IP, you simply went to your ISP and said, hey, I'll buy my voice over IP service from you. And now the carrier didn't make any money other than the base amount that they got in rent from your ISP for the physical wires. Not a good move. Well, what about VoIP versus traditional telephony? Well, Henning Schulterin has been very active in this area, had a wonderful slide called Why Should Carriers Worry? And if we look at how much you pay for different things, in GSM at the time of this slide, which was in June of 2002, it cost about $4 to $10 per megabyte. But if you could get the customer to send it as SMS, it was $62.50 per megabyte, and voice was about $1.70 per megabyte. The carriers really were very frightened by this idea of content-neutral bandwidth. Why is that? Well, because they had this plan that they were going to have things like video on demand and so forth. Now, how much do you pay to rent a movie if you go into a video store? 39 cents? Right? 69 krona, whatever. Now, are you going to pay more to download it across the network? Maybe a little, but not much. Right? Because if I have to go off to the video store, I at least have to put my pants on before I go out the front door. So maybe I'll pay a little bit of a premium, but not a high premium. But if I can send an entire movie of gigabytes for this small price, how much am I going to be able to charge for sending the packets in voice? 0.0000 euro. Right? It's insignificant amount of traffic. Well, up until a few years ago, where did traditional telephony operators make most of their money? Yes, on voice services. Why was GPRS, which might have been able to carry voice, and there's a very nice thesis about a year ago from a student who made some measurements in Iran for what would happen if you were to carry VoIP over GPRS, if this had been priced cheaper? Right? It was artificially priced high. Why? Because I could send my digitized voice across the GPRS network cheaper than the voice call. And therefore I would lose revenue on my normal voice traffic. So GPRS was designed purposely, I believe, and it was certainly priced purposely to discourage that. Well, in classical telephony, only operators can offer services. With VoIP, anyone can offer a service. So you can come up with a new idea for a service, put it up, tell your friends about it, and voila, off you go offering a new service. If you try to put a new service into the public switch telephony network to put it into an exchange, how long do you think it'll take to get your service accepted? Well, most of us won't live that long. Right? It'll take years and years and years and years. Just doing the integration testing for Verizon in Pennsylvania 10 years ago, when they had only three different kinds of exchanges, cost them millions of dollars just to test that the new software releases would work with each other because of the interactions, because of these features. SIP only needs to handle the signaling, not media traffic. And this reason here of whether it's SIP, Skype, whatever, that you only have to, as a voice operator, handle the signaling is why Skype has a business, why it's scalable. You only handle the signaling traffic. And that only, basically, for most cases, happens at the start and end of the call. So if you go to the Skype webpage and you see, you know, billions of minutes, blah, blah, that we have served, like McDonald's serving hot dogs, or hamburgers, rather. They didn't carry any of that traffic. None of it. Zero of it. Until they introduced Skype in and Skype out. Because all the media packets are sent directly between the two parties who are speaking to each other. They don't go through any other nodes. This has just phenomenal impact. Another problem is in traditional telephony, it was very difficult to become a telephone operator, except in Sweden. And nowadays with VoIP, there are basically no regulatory hurdles. Anyone could be a VoIP operator. Now, Sweden has been a very special case in this, because does anyone know what you had to do to become a so-called teleoperator in Sweden? You simply went to PTS and said, "Hi, I'm Gerald McGuire. I want to be a teleoperator. Where do I sign?" That's all you had to do, was file to be a teleoperator. You didn't have to pay any money. And, interestingly enough, it was voluntary. But if you became a teleoperator when you signed the piece of paper, you obligated yourself to provide a set of services to any customers who were similarly situated. That means I couldn't say yes to this customer and no to that customer if they basically could both be provided service. I would have to, and if I provide voice service, I would have to provide voice service to both of them. Now, why would anyone want to be a teleoperator or a, in English-speaking countries, called a common carrier? Anyone know why? Well, the key reason is the fact that if you're a common carrier, or in the Swedish teleoperator, you are not responsible for content. That's the customer's responsibility. So anything that they communicate to each other, that's their business. And as a common carrier, you're prohibited from interfering or tampering with the content of their call. Now, what happens if you're an ISP? Anyone here from France? No, no one here. Germany, Bayern. Yes? Someone from Bayern? No. Okay. In both places, ISPs have been prosecuted for the content of their customers' communication. And the reason being that there are local laws that said that certain content is illegal. And in the case, we'll pick on Bavaria for a moment, because customers communicated certain things which were prohibited, and because the ISP had filtered some of this content, but not all of this illegal content, the ISP was found guilty and paid a very big fine. Because the regulator said, if you can filter some of this, you should be doing filtering of all of it. Okay, and legally, ISPs are responsible and can be found criminally liable for the content that their customers send via their network. But teleoperators or common carriers are not responsible at all. Okay, who else has responsibility for content? Anyone know? Well, if you're a newspaper and you publish something in a newspaper, you're responsible, and in Sweden you can be fined if what you print isn't correct. But you could call one of your friends on the telephone and you could say, that rat bastard McGuire, blah, 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 what an idiot, he knows nothing about data communication. There'd be nothing illegal about that from the operator's point of view. Right? It's just content. And as a common carrier, you're not responsible for content. So, there are some reasons still today to want to be a registered teleoperator or common carrier. Now, for those of you who read Swedish law, there is no such thing anymore in Sweden as a teleoperator. The new communications law doesn't include such a special term. And it's going to be very interesting to see exactly what's going to happen. And will carriers be held responsible for the communications that they carry? In additionally, only vendors could create new services, so you had to have your Ericsson or Alcatel, Nortel, whoever had to build it into their product. Now anybody can create a new service. And the new services, of course, can be much broader than traditional telephony services. Now, is all of this something new? No. In fact, Lois Flam and John Lim at Bell Laboratories filed in 1983 a patent for mixing voice and data over LANs. That's one of the earliest patents that I found in this area. So this is not new ideas at all. But, of course, it usually takes some time before we go from ideas to actually wide market acceptance. So what are the trends? Well, today, routers and switches have basically replaced circuit switch telephony equipment. standard telecom interfaces are getting replaced by datacom interfaces. There are lots of new alliances. There's lots of interesting developments like fax broadcast, et cetera, speech to text, text to speech conversion. Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley had a project called Iceberg for how to replace all of the cellular network's traditional telephony connections with IP-based connections. And I think today we can basically say that telecom-only operators have no future and telecom-only companies have no future. You can't ignore VoIP. It's a reality. And the effects are there. We today have plenty of carriers offering voice over IP. And if we just look at a company like Verizon, now with their service called VoiceWing, unlimited calling within the U.S. for $34.95. Now this was some time ago. And basically they said, as we can see, the industry fundamentals continue to shift. The future will be about the convergence of computing and telecommunications. And where these two worlds meet is where MCI will be. Now, of course, this was after his predecessor was meeting with some of his other previous executives all in prison, but that's a separate matter. It was not because of their activities in voice, it was because of their activities in the stock market. So this world where computing and telecommunications meet. Why is this so interesting for us? As we said earlier this morning, we have the data in digital form. Therefore, it's very easy to manipulate. Therefore, it's searchable, storable, indexable, plus encryptable, etc. And this is a major change. MCI, one of the major reasons that they've moved in this direction is they ran at least three separate networks because they were formed from different companies. Different companies used different technologies. And instead of running three separate networks, this way they could just run one single converged network. Another interesting thing is that this problem about moves, adds, and changes. If you worked for the company that used to own this building, anyone know who that was? IBM. Anyone know what the initials IBM stand for? Yes? Okay, that's the formal company's translation, International Business Machines. Does anyone know what the employee's translation was? I've been moved. Right? And the difficulty was this is a company that routinely moved people all over the place. Not surprisingly, in a typical company, there is slightly higher than one move per person per year for the employees in a company. Now, why do we care about that in terms of VoIP? Okay, how difficult is it for me to move from, let's say, this building to the Electrum building if I have a VoIP handset? So what do? I go and unplug it from the LAN here, walk to the other building, plug it into the LAN over there. I moved. Now what happens if I'm connected to a traditional PBX? A change order. Well, the first thing is if I'm lucky, it's only a change order. So somebody has to sit down and say, oh, McGuire is no longer at this particular physical wire, but they're at that particular physical wire, and they type it in. And that'll be 350 krona, please. Yes, you had to pay for change orders. And they were very expensive. And if you're moving, on average, one move per year per employee, this is a lot of money. But with VoIP, we didn't need to do that. As additionally, we'll see that we can even support mobility, and there's an extremely wonderful master's thesis by Raul Garcia, roughly 3 years ago, who showed that for an international company, where you often have employees going from one branch to another, from factories or offices, etc., that being able to combine VoIP, mobile IP, and virtual private networks is an enormous financial advantage for the company. Because now you can keep your VoIP handset and it works from any part of the company and it works securely. And if I call someone in any place that my company has representation, what do? I send my data through the company's data network till it reaches the local office, and from there I go out as a local phone call. And I can do that from anywhere inside the company's network. Yes, very big cost savings. So, it gets around lots of the problems of the closed PBX architecture. So, you get all of these advantages, and as I say, mobility is one of the very, very big advantages for businesses today. Level 3 basically did this for operators with essentially carrier-to-carrier, network-to-network offerings. And Telia Sonera introduced their broadband telephony, as I mentioned earlier. And the interesting thing is that all customers had numbers that began this way, 7515. And so essentially all of their customers formed a virtual city. It was as if you had a city code allocated to VoIP customers. Now this was prior to the time whenever you had number portability. So what does number portability mean? Anyone ever switch from one cellular operator to another? No? Well, in Sweden, you can do it. Yes, what happened? Yes, but not in Sweden anymore. That's right. Because Sweden decided that to encourage competition, you should be able to have customers move from one network to another. And if you did what many other countries do and not permit them to keep their number, they don't want to move. Because if they do, they lose all their contacts. Yes. So what do? Well, you make the numbers portable. And so in Sweden, it's required for cellular telephony that numbers be portable between operators. And in many places, this is now becoming the case even for fixed telephony. As long as you move within some very large region, usually often nationally, you get to keep your telephone number. So having a 08 number, but living in Jokkmokk, will become feasible. And for the interesting thing here is, of course, as I already said, no matter where in the country you were all virtually in the 07515 set of numbers. They weren't geographic anymore. So on that note, we'll pause and we'll come back in, let's say, 10 minutes and continue on. So have a short 10-minute break, and then we'll talk about how do we emulate the PSTN. Any questions? Is everyone signed up? If not, come down here. There's a sign-up list.
So,
sign-up list.
Some people have overlapping platforms for this.